So I was at a rural ministry conference this weekend, or this last week, and one of the things that they talked about was celebrating failure. And and you know, there's a couple of things we don't do well in our culture, and it's celebrate failure and it's acknowledge grief. We don't grieve well, and I think that's part of joy. We don't know how to find the joy in the midst of grief. There's a real tension there. And it's just an uncomfortable place to be. And I think failure is the same way. We don't know how to celebrate failure because we're in such a win-lose culture that if we celebrate failure, we're losers. Where in reality, if we celebrate failure, we at least tried something.
Let me welcome you to episode 14 of Mindful Leader. This is Dennis Shaw, and I am a retired elder in the Mountain Sky Conference of the United Methodist Church. Mindful Leader is a relatively new podcast focused on leadership at the local church for both lay and clergy. My guest today is the Reverend Zach Bechtold, and he is currently the pastor at Bozeman United Methodist Church. Zach is a graduate of the Iliff School of Theology, and he also hosts his own podcast, which is called Bearded Theologians. I'll have a link to that in the show notes. My guest for our next visit will be Annie Arnoldy. She is a superintendent for Vitality and Connectional Ministry at the Mountain Sky Conference, and she and I are going to talk a little bit about dreaming and visioning. After we take a short break, we'll resume our conversation with Zach. Thank you very much for listening to Mindful Leader. God bless you.
Let me welcome you back to Mindful Leader. As I indicated earlier, my guest this morning is Zach Bechtold. I've joked around a little bit with Zach about the fact that he's back. He's the first person to come back for a second time to Mindful Leader. Well, thank you, Zach, for having said yes a second time.
Of course, Dennis. Thanks for having me again. We'll find you a better podcast guest, maybe. I don't know.
I will tell you that I have asked a couple of people to speak, and they said, as long as I don't follow Zach Bechtold on your sequencing, you have a lot of respect out there. I can tell you that.
I'm grateful for that.
It seems like on Bearded Theologians, you give swag away at some point in time when people have been on there two or three times. Is that right?
That's true. We often try to give our guests that come back, for multiple times, coffee mugs or t-shirts. And we've had, Reverend Matt Rawl out of Louisiana. He writes a lot of Advent books and other books. He's probably our leading guest right behind Bishop Karen. And we're talking about getting the both of them green jackets or gold jackets like you do on SNL, or if you win the Masters, right? If you're on Bearded Theologians five times, you get a fancy jacket.
Yeah, the Masters is a green jacket, I think.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have a little bit of fun.
I'll rely on you for some input right here. Right now, you're at number two. I'm sort of thinking about five. I owe you some kind of swag. Does that sound like a good number?
That's a great number, right? Yeah, I would love to be on here five times.
You're going to be on here five times. Just a question of how long it takes. I'm hoping to get sort of your voice a couple of times-ish or so a year. We'll see. So that would sort of mean I probably need to answer the question of what we're going to give away by 2025 or so. Coffee cup sounds good. As if you need another coffee cup.
Everybody loves a good coffee cup, right?
Yeah. Part of this was that I wanted to come back a little bit, and I'm trying to make these podcasts not necessarily so time dependent. But that having been said, you spoke with Bishop Karen several weeks ago, and you came back to a topic that she had talked about to the gathered clergy in Fort Collins in late September. Mm-hmm. And the theme, as I think I recall it, was sort of on this idea of joy, of trying to bring joy, fun, humor, lightheartedness back to leadership of the church. Is that a fair assessment of what you think you talked about with her?
Yeah, it is. We, Matt and I, with the Bearded Theologians, we got an invitation to go on United Methodist Communications podcast-a-thon.
Yeah.
So there were several live podcasts throughout the week, a few weeks ago, and we invited Bishop Karen on. And the theme for United Methodist Communications was discipleship. They mm-hmm. wanted every podcast talking about discipleship. In our conversation with Bishop Karen, we got to the idea of joy. And
yeah.
if we're going to make disciples, if we're going to be disciples, joy is a key vital component to that. And as we talked at clergy orders, there was a lot of conversation centered around the lack of joy, or just missing joy, or not paying attention to it, right? Because it's been a hard few years, and this is heavy work, and we're tired, and we're grieving a lot of things, and sometimes joy just doesn't seem like it fits in. And so, yeah, we had a great conversation centered around what does it mean to be joyful in our work, and how do we reclaim that?
Yeah, reclaiming it, I think, is one of the elements I'd sort of like to dwell on for a few moments, if we can. Dr. Tom Barlow at ILF and I've had a couple of conversations about how hard these last 3 years has been. And his comment to me was, Dennis, unless you've been here in the local church and live the local church experience during this COVID thing, you just don't understand of how hard it has been. And my own guess is that difficulty sort of sucked a lot of the joy of leading the church out of it. Does that make sense?
It does. You know, when we all I don't even want to say closed down because I don't like that language.
There's,
but when we all pivoted,
right.
When we pivoted during COVID, it was such a hard and drastic and jarring pivot from doing what we've done forever and switching to something different, whether it was digital ministry or pre-recorded, or we had churches up in Northern Montana just calling all of their congregation, you know, on a conference call, putting it on speakerphone and having the service, right? However we did the beginning and through COVID, it was just such a hard pivot that in some ways we got to be really creative. And in some ways, we were just desperate to scramble and put together something that was hopefully meaningful. And it was hard. Tom's right. Unless you did it, you can't understand how hard it was.
Yeah, I mentioned a few weeks ago with another pastor about this Genesis 50, verse 20 thing where Joseph is talking to his brothers, and he says, "This is your brothers." To his brothers, you planned what happened to me for evil, but God turned it to good. Now, I don't mean that God planned or anybody brought the COVID onto us. Sometimes on some of these churches, there has been some good that came out of it, which was some modernization, some different approaches to how they do things and things like that. But it sometimes joy gets sort of left on the sidelines, and we forget about the fact that church, I don't mean say, at least for me, when I was a leader in local church, I tried to make the experience on Sunday morning and meetings as well to be sort of fun, to be joyful, to be happy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think ever since I started working with college students a whole mess of years ago, and we were working with leadership, and we were sitting in a leadership meeting, and everybody was kind of ho-humming around and how do we get more students, and just kind of a little grumpy about it. And I just kind of stopped everybody and just flat out asked, do you enjoy coming here? Like, are you having fun? And they were like, well, yeah, start there. Cause if,
yeah,
so let's start there. Cause if we're not excited about what we're doing, then nobody's good. Why would anybody else be excited?
Yeah.
And if there's something that we're doing in this ministry, in this setting, regardless of where it is, and I've brought that idea, if I'm not excited about something, why would anybody else be?
Yeah.
If we're not excited about it, let's talk about not doing that anymore or changing it so that we can be excited about it. Because, if we just keep doing the same old thing and it used to be exciting, but it's not exciting anymore, everybody else feels that, the community, the congregation, everyone will pick up on that, and they're not going to be excited about it.
Yeah,
I'm like you. I start with that place of excitement, even on Sunday mornings. The welcome, and we have a great service, lined up for you. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. We're so glad you're here.
Well, for me, as soon as the first hymn was over, and we would go to a brief passing of the peace at Hilltop, Hilltop in Utah, I would go. Today is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And I'm using glad and joyful as synonymous. It was something I said. I was there 7 years, 50 weeks, 350 times.
Yeah.
So yeah.
No, it's fun. And we have to, and that was a lot of the conversation we had with Bishop Karen, was how do we reclaim that?
Yes, reclaim.
Let us be joyful. This is the day the Lord has made, and let us be glad, right? Let us be joyful. How do we not just say those words? I used to teach, I still try to, anybody that's preaching, again, came with when I was leading college students, and they often had a chance to have a pulpit. When we would go through their sermon or whatever they were talking about, I've seen so many speakers, professional and otherwise, get up and say, "I'm so excited to be here." Are you?
I know.
Are you excited to be here? And I, my comments of my students or whomever I was coaching through that was, even if you're not excited to be there, sound excited to be there. Right. You get up there and fake it until you're having a good time. You can be grumpy about it when you're done. But I guarantee if you start that way, the rest will follow, right?
Yeah. I don't know if you'd heard Ted Campbell from Perkins's podcast with me 3 or 4 weeks ago. And he was talking about how John Wesley was probably a closet introvert. But it's actually, in our world, we sort of expect introverts to become extroverts. And I'm one of those. I mean, so on Sunday morning, I set aside my normal introvert, my closet introvert thing, and I faked it. I faked my extrovert thing until I got to the end. And I would say, going back to what we're saying here, is that the same can be with this element of joy. Fake it until you've got it.
Right.
And I think you and Bishop Kara may have made this comment, is that the best sermon delivered badly, and I would say badly would include morose, somber, is inferior to the worst sermon delivered happy, joyful, I'm happy to be here kind of thing.
Yeah, that's truly the way I approach my preaching. Every congregation I've served, I hear the same thing of, gosh, you bring a lot of energy here. And it's like, yeah, excitement and energy will cover up a whole lot of mediocrity. I can preach a halfway mediocre sermon or worse, right? And if I do it with excitement and joy, it lands a little better than if I get up there and go, I know this sucks. You also are going to know this sucks.
Yeah. It's a terrible indictment sometimes that we get ourselves stuck in the area that on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock gets here every week, whether we want it to or not.
That's right.
So yeah, you've got to go ahead.
I had a beautiful office administrator early on when I moved to Montana. I was lamenting on a Monday morning over a cup of coffee in her office of how crappy my sermon was the previous day. And she said, you know what? You got another one coming in 7 days. And I was like, that is true. She's like, let that one go. Let it go. And look at the next one. It truly, truly changed what I did on Monday mornings. Because, I'd come in and dwell and be like, what can I do better? Just, have those conversations. But also, you got another one coming. Sunday comes around every 7 days. So let's go.
Yeah, the guy who was the editor of First Things, former Lutheran, became a Catholic, John, I'll think of it. I'll put it in the show notes. But anyway, he made the comment that if you're starting your sermon preparation on Monday morning, you're a little late. His comment was he tried to start on Sunday afternoon after he got through with that morning sermon. So really, I mean, what he didn't mean start, but really start getting down into it.
I have learned when I'm done preaching on Sunday mornings, as soon as I sit down, or really as I'm leaving the pulpit, I take a big breath.
Yeah.
And I'm done with that sermon. That's it. I'm on to the next one. I just
Good.
Kind of that emptying of, and if I can't do that, I feel like I didn't give that sermon my all, right? I have more work to do as I lead into the next Sunday.
Yeah. And and part of our leadership at the local church is the Sunday morning proclamation, but it's also church council meetings. It's also trustee stuff. Mm-hmm. It's sitting down with the staff parish relations committee or what, however your church is organized that's also part of it. And I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings at Hilltop. But when I got to Hilltop in 2012, the finance meetings were just so dark. They were just so dark, and it took a while. It took a while to find the joy in what was going on. But we had to learn to figure out a way to sort of name some of the good stuff that was happening.
Yeah, I was at a rural ministry conference this weekend or this last week, and one of the things that they talked about was celebrating failure, and you know, there's a couple of things we don't do well in our culture, and it's celebrate failure and it's acknowledge grief. We don't grieve well. And I think that's part of joy. We don't know how to find the joy in the midst of grief. There's a real tension there. And it's just an uncomfortable place to be. And I think failure is the same way. We don't know how to celebrate failure because we're in such a win-lose culture that if we celebrate failure, we're losers. Where in reality, if we celebrate failure, we at least tried something. And there's joy in that. And when you look at the leadership boards of the church, you know, if we're not willing to celebrate failure in the midst of our finances of, gosh, why are we a little short? You know, have we, whatever it is, right? We can celebrate a lot of things in the midst of heavy conversation, especially in regards to money or leadership or anything. And if it's just failure because we're not doing anything, that's not a way to celebrate. But if we can talk about it and say, gosh, we're not doing anything, we're failing, or gosh, we're trying everything and we have some wins here and we have some failures over here, and great, where's the joy in between those two of how we carry forward? And you're right, finance meetings are glum sometimes.
They can be.
And even when it's hard and you're trying to figure out how to break even, or, you know, figure out where the money to pay the light bill is, we can find some joy in that. But I think if we lead from a place of doom and gloom and we're gonna have to shut the lights off, okay, well, we'll do a candlelight service, right? Like, there's some redemption in that we can do as we look through those things. That's not a, I don't know, sometimes when we talk about joy, it's kind of a false joy or a toxic positivity type of joy where everything's sunshines and rainbows. You know, that's dangerous, but also just finding ways to find true joy is important.
But you mentioned an element of grief there, and the fact that sometimes grief and joy are mentioned in rapid rapidity in close context is a biblical theme. I think back to Psalm 126, where at the end of the psalm goes, "Those who go out weeping, carrying seed to sow, will return with songs of joy, carrying sheaves with them." And of course, this particular stanza has become part of the key element for the refrain from one of these old standbys, bringing in the sheaves, we will come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves. And it's this element of the fact that some of those sheaves of wheat, that harvest, that fruitfulness, emerges out of grief, out of pain, out of a more a less than you wanted to have happen, but you are going to have a fruitfulness at some point in time, and celebrate that.
Absolutely. We have to go through those. We have to go through the ups and downs, right?
Yeah.
Back to Tom Barlow, and leading through COVID was hard, hard, hard. And it absolutely was. But look at where we are now.
Yeah.
Agreed. Not even in the being able to do digital ministry aspect of it, and how stuff has changed on Sunday and throughout the week, but how more open we are to say, let's try that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be as hard as it was a couple of years ago. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's an element to that that's so fruitful, and so needed in what we do. I can remember my commissioning interview. So much of my commissioning paperwork was written in the idea of the both and of digital and physical presence or physical community. And I got the question of, well, how does this work? And I said, it's all kind of hypothetical right now. Like, we're doing some elements of it, but we haven't. We're putting some into praxis, and some of it's really hypothetical, but there's going to be a day where we're all doing this, and that day is pretty quick. Quite literally, that day was 3 days later when everybody shut down for COVID.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, now we're doing it. You know, we're all having to do it. And it went from, you know, ideas and kind of big picture things to really, really practical, really, really quick. And it was fascinating to watch, not only in my ministry, but watch other people really be super creative and find joy in the burden of having to do something different.
And I'm an adult learner. I'm 75, and I just continue to try to learn how to do things. But I find this stuff of learning how to do these new different things to be fun. They're joyful for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's you and I are a lot alike. I approach things like that very, very much. And the beginning of COVID was a ton of fun. But I was also prepared to make that transition. We were doing bits and pieces of it. It was when we began to come back out of it, and we were doing the both and there was such resistance to doing both and just that question of, when are we going to go back to normal? We're not. that's no longer a world we live in.
Yeah.
And what I didn't do well in my ministry was grieve that, and make space for people to grieve that. My personality is, we're just going to press forward, right? Let's just keep moving forward and keep going. We have a lot of momentum, and I miss the part of grieving. I don't think we do that well in pastoral transition. I don't think we do grieving well at all. But I think that's a key thing that we've missed in the last few years, is just the ability and space to grieve, and find joy in the things that we're doing. That's really cool now, but grieve what we not even lost, but just grieve.
Well, I personally, and unfortunately, this is one of those things of where the experience that you and I might have at an annual conference in hypothetically Colorado Springs or Denver or Bozeman or something. Like, for example, that when we take a vote to close churches, I really think that the people who lead that at the conference level do a very, very good job of trying to emphasize that, yes, we're closing this small church. It's no longer functioning. But that does not mean that the work that they did doesn't have fruit that has been produced further other places. And so I think at annual conference, we do, I think, a good job of dealing with the grief of having to close that church. But I wonder how good a job we do at the local church or in the community of what it is that has happened, that there everything dies. I shouldn't say everything, but most everything dies. And so this closing of this small church is a phase in the life of this community, but that doesn't mean that God is dead. All that means is that this particular church has closed, but we can certainly use the fruitfulness of it from other in other places, other ways. And let's figure out what those are. Let's be joyful about that. Yes, let's grieve what has happened. Mm-hmm. Let's go out weeping, but we're carrying seeds to sow, and we're going to return with songs of joy, carrying sheaves with us.
Right.
And frankly, they wrote that as a return from Babylon, but yeah.
I don't have, I've seen us close churches in this conference, but I've never served in a community that's also had a church close here. I have in other conferences I've served. And yeah, kind of the same thing, celebrated and grieved well at conference, but on the local level, not so much. It was very much a, hey, I'm sorry, but there's another Methodist church in town, just go join them. It was really, really this sentiment, which is a huge bummer. That's not grieving. That's not sacred space. That's just saying, go over there.
Yeah.
Which is just, I don't know, poor pastoral leadership, right? We would never tell that to a family grieving a loved one of, we'll just go over there, right?
Yeah,
we would walk with them to the next space.
Yeah, I'm sorry your wife has died of cancer. There are not a lot of women out there looking for a man like you. Oh, God, come on. We would never say that. We would never say that.
No. What we do is we gather together and we tell the stories.
Yeah.
We celebrate a life well lived. And we laugh together, at least in my funeral services, we laugh together, we cry together, and we talk about legacy. How do you live this person's legacy out in all that you do? What did they teach you about this life and love, about faith, about everything that you're going to live out and share with your family, your friends, strangers, your community, wherever, with anybody who will listen? That's where we go.
Yeah, David Brooks, he calls them like resume virtues and funeral virtues, I think is what he refers to them as. Mm-hmm. And sort of what really becomes important is those things are going to talk about at your funeral.
Yeah, yeah. I never start with a family of tell me what they did for a living. I always start with, tell me the stories that y'all have told at Thanksgiving or Christmas the last 20 years. Tell me the stories that make you laugh. Cause that's who those people are. And it's the best.
And we call them celebrations of life. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if perhaps when we decide we have to close a church, that perhaps following some kind of funeral model where we do a celebration of the life of this church, and indeed focus on the hundreds of people that were sustained and nurtured by this church, some of which have gone to the church triumphant already, and others which their children and grandchildren were affected by them.
Yeah. You know, it's, I don't know when you're releasing this particular episode.
20th of November.
20th of November. So as you listen to this, a couple of weeks back, we celebrated All Saints Day, which is doing this very thing, creating sacred space for us to grieve the people we've lost in the last year or so, but also to celebrate them in a sacred and special way that we don't just remember they're gone. We remember why they were here and what they taught us. And I spend a whole month on it. All the Sundays leading up from November 1 to Advent week 1 is about our saints. You know, who are the people among us that have made significant impacts on our life?
Well, November actually is a wonderful opportunity to be a month of gratitude. We have gratitude for those that are saints on the first Sunday. The second Sunday we have a chance to celebrate those who have served the nation. And I think those that have served the nation have given us examples of how to serve the church. Mm-hmm. And then the third Sunday of the month is often right before Thanksgiving. It's a chance to do that. And then generally, often many times, the last Sunday of November is Christ the King Sunday.
Right.
It's, and boy, I mean, November ought to be a chance to have an attitude of gratitude, which if you can't have an attitude of gratitude leading to joy, then why are you there on Sunday morning? Yeah.
Right. And I have for many, many years used November as a lead in to Advent of here, this is the end of the year, right? Like, let's kind of remember where we've been, where we are, and where we're going as we lead into this season of waiting.
Yeah.
And really, really push the, we're going to slow it down. We're going to wait, and we're not going to birth baby Jesus on, the second week of Advent. We're going to give it a minute, and we're going to sit in this, because it's the culmination of the end of the year into the beginning, and how much there is there.
And please don't send any email notes about the fact we haven't sung Christmas carols on the first Sunday of December. Yeah.
Right. Right. I always tell I'm not a get all the way through Advent to sing Christmas songs, because we only have like three good Advent songs. But I do try to at least wait till the third Sunday to sing Christmas carols. And then we hit them hard Christmas Eve and into the next couple of weeks.
But, yeah. Yeah. But it was interesting. I mean, as you were reflecting on that, as you sort of, November is sort of a setting of the stage, but even then when you get to Advent, it's still a second setting of the stage,
right.
As I hear you say that. And I, to me, one of the most powerful passages for me personally is Paul writing to the church in Philippi. And in that, he sort of goes through these four ifs, and I can't remember what the ifs all are, but they're essentially, if you are really thoughtful about how your relationship with Christ Jesus has changed your life, okay, that's sort of my take on what those four ifs are all about, then make my joy complete. And by the way, show the world that your joy is complete as well. And so the sermon yesterday where I worship here in West Virginia, it was one of the major takeaways was, have you heard the good news? Have you heard the good news? Jesus loves you. Have you heard the good news? And it's I think I preached a sermon one time of almost all the theology you need to know is in that children's song about Jesus loves you. This I know, for the Bible tells us so.
Right.
It's how powerful that is, and how joyful it you'd like to believe that makes you.
Yeah. And yes. and I think it, we take as clergy, we take this work in sharing the good news so seriously, and we should. Yeah. It's serious, it's heavy work. And because often clergy are empathetic and compassionate people just by nature, it's probably why we're clergy, right?
Yeah.
We don't find good ways to release that burden, and we carry that weight on our shoulders. And yeah, we just don't make we just carry the weight of it, right? And take yeah. it way too seriously, and then don't allow ourselves to find joy in the work that we do. And I don't know, that has been, I love what I do. I've had a real job previous to this, and I don't want to have a real job again. I want to do this for a lot of reasons, right? And we have just a lot of conversation about how hard it is and how just heavy the burden of being clergy is. And that is very, very true. But also, it is great, joyful work. And we got to find ways to reclaim that a little bit.
I agree. And I would hope that coming out of going back to our new normal, whatever our new normal is going to be, mm-hmm. I would hope that would be part of what we would want to do from a leadership perspective, is be willing to claim that. Mm-hmm. One thing I used to tell people, particularly at weddings, but my overall approach in general was, yes, the work that we're doing here is serious, but we don't have to be serious in this work all the time. And I would try to make little comedic responses, try to make a little joke out of something, mm-hmm. How we're all Paul at some point in time, how we're much like, feel like Paul on various occasions. Mm-hmm. It's just part of the characters of the Bible are us. That's part of, to me, is why they speak to us still after yes. all this time. They're us.
Yep. Yeah. I totally agree with that. My go-to, at least for me personally, I wouldn't put this on anybody else. Ecclesiastes is probably my favorite book
yeah.
in all of scripture. Because verse two in chapter one, I mean, just names it.
Yeah.
Everything is perfectly pointless. It's Ecclesiastes is just this venture into asking the questions we still ask today. Why are these things happening, right? Where is God in all of it? And how do we fit in? And, you know, we use Ecclesiastes 3 a lot for funerals and just everything. There's a season for everything. But I think the thing that we miss out of the whole theme, it shows up constantly throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, is the writer's finding the answer that all of this stuff is happening. You know, bad things happen to good people. Good things happen to bad people. Why, you know, just why are these things happening? And the thing that I think that we miss, and the thing that brings me joy, is the answer over and over again is, I know there's nothing better for them to enjoy themselves and to do what is good while they live. Moreover, this is the gift of God, that people should eat, drink, and enjoy the results of their hard work. And we don't do that well. We get stuck in the why, in the how, and the where, instead of just going, hey, you know what? Let's live in the holy mystery for a minute. And all of this is just perfectly pointless. And let's enjoy where we are.
I think for me, what scared me about entering into ministry from the beginning was that so many people that I'd heard preach didn't have any joy.
Yes.
And until I sort of figured out how that what part of my call was going to be to be joyful on Sunday morning and my leadership in general, it really terrorized me. But when I finally got to a place of you can have fun doing this, it's more than a damned assignment. It for me personally was a change in the way my attitude towards my approach towards it. It freed me up.
Mm-hmm.
It was empowering. It was liberating.
It is. I can remember being on staff at a church before I really understood or really had ever been affirmed in a call to ministry. I was doing some youth ministry and some tech work at a church full time, and pastoral ministry was not on my radar because that is all I ever saw. Grumpy old pastors that were just wearing suits every day they weren't having fun.
Yeah.
And I thought, if that's pastoral ministry, I'll keep working with youth. Right. Yeah. Like, I'm going to go throw dodgeballs at kids and we're going to play fun games and then we're going to talk about Jesus. Right. I told myself in those moments, if that's what being a pastor is, if it's wearing a suit every day to sit in my office and reflect upon the mysteries of the world and be grumpy about it, I don't want any part of that.
Yeah. This 75-year-old man is with you on that one. And that was, and frankly, what you just suggested was how I tried to approach it. I didn't wear a suit every day,
right.
Hardly ever wore a suit. And I really tried to be, I shouldn't say lighthearted, but I certainly tried to present I wasn't faking it. I mean, I was enjoying myself. People would ask you, are you having a good time? I'm having a ball.
I'm having a blast.
I'm having a blast.
I've said that a billion times since I really everywhere, but really since I got to Bozeman. I in my pastoral assessment last year, I told my SPRC chair, I said, I've been in ministry in some form or fashion for 20 years now. I've done youth ministry and campus ministry and I've led churches and I've had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I've never had more fun than I am right now. And I am busy and tired and there's a lot going on, but I've never in 20 years had more fun doing this job.
I can't remember if it's you and I talked about this before, but I created a children's sermon when I was a student at Wesley in the late 1990s. And I've actually given that sermon maybe 10, 15 times since then. And what I did was I took bricks. I took three bricks and wrapped them in white paper, three real heavy bricks. And they were things like grief, but you, I mean, whatever you want to put on them is something that holds you down. And then there's this stuff that goes into nurseries that you can plug flowers into that are like styrofoam. They're very, very, very light. Mm-hmm. And so they weigh almost nothing. And so you wrap those up and you put all six bricks inside of a backpack. And then you tell the kids that You want to leave three of these at the altar, and then you want to carry the other three your whole life. Which three do you want to carry your whole life? And and I would think writing things on the three bricks in whatever our context is, that lead to us being joyful, lighthearted, focused, happy in our work, etc., is the things we need to carry, because you can carry those bricks your whole life. Right. Whereas the stuff that slows you down, just put those on the altar and give those to God.
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to steal that.
I got it from somebody else.
Yeah.
I stole it from somebody else gladly. We could probably talk about this subject for days and days and days, and you've got some leadership to do at Bozeman, and I've got some grandfather duties to do here in West Virginia. Anything that we didn't, that you had an epiphany on earlier and I was rambling too long, you say, oh boy, I really would like to say this, and you didn't get a chance to say it?
No, Dennis, I could talk about this all day, because it's so, so important.
It is.
I mean, just, I talk so much to my congregations and just people about how we hold the tension between joy and grief, and they truly work together as opposed to being opposites.
They are.
We have to have both of them. And so I love this conversation. I don't think we could have it enough. So thanks for letting me come on here and equally ramble.
Well, yeah, I don't think you rambled at all. I got the impression, my impression was, is that we had an honest sharing of thoughts about this particular topic, and it may have not had an outline, but
which
I'm
are
not
my
sure.
Favorite things.
Yeah, but I'm not, I think we had a good joyful conversation. So
absolutely.
Okay, this is number two for you. I think we've sort of semi-agreed. When we get to number five, I've got to have something for you, like a T-shirt or a coffee cup or something.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. Cool. I like big coffee mugs, and I wear large T-shirts. So that's
okay. Zach, thank you very much for having said yes to being on Mindful Leader. For those of you that are listening, I am registered with iTunes. I am registered on a couple of the platforms. I personally use Overcast, but I have been able to find Mindful Leader on various podcast platforms. If you have trouble finding it, send me a note at Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, the at symbol, A-T, Mantuan, mantuan.org, and I'll see what I can do to help get you up to speed. Zach, thank you very much for having said yes, and I look forward to talking to you another day.
Of course, Dennis, thanks. I'll come back anytime.
God bless you. Thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Peace be with you.